Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And Liam Neeson leads me nicely into an exciting bit of news for 30-somethings. Hang on to your hats and roll up your sleeves, folks. We've just had a tweet from the Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, a couple of minutes ago, where he says he is delighted to announce for some of you under 40s, the registration for a COVID-19 vaccine will open to those aged 35 to 39 on Sunday, starting with those who are aged 39, 38 on Monday and so on. And just let me tell you, I was able to go on literally at a minute past midnight when my age cohort, which is not 30-something, came into view, and the response was really, really quick in terms of actually getting the date. So do sign up as quick as you can and get that jab. 30-somethings starting or registering from Sunday onwards. We know that problematic drinking is a big issue, or as big an issue for men as it is for women. But are we sexist about alcoholism? Do women experience less sympathy, more criticism than men in the same situation? And is there a double standard when it comes to how society views drinking among men and women? Well, my next guest is Sandra Losty, founder of Recovery Hour and a recovering alcoholic herself. And she says that she faced this type of stigma when she was trying to get help. Sandra, very good morning to you. Thanks for talking to us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Are women drinkers judged more harshly than men drinkers?
They're definitely judged differently, and there would be different things said about them. So yes, I would absolutely agree with that statement.
So some of those things being the things that cut more deeply. I mean, I suppose we would say of a man drinker, oh God, how has he managed to hold down his job? But then people would say of a woman drinker, oh, the poor children.
Straight away, yeah. So the comments are never really, or would seldom be, about the concern for the woman. It would all go to the children. Absolutely, the children need to be thought about and cared for. But we wouldn't say kind of automatically, oh, the poor children, when it comes to a man who's addressing his drinking problem.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a pressure there. Already the person has a problem, the woman has a problem, and then there's a pressure that's put on about the children straight away. So it's kind of removed them from addressing their own issue.
And are men, do you think, better or different at hiding their drinking to women? Or are women better capable of multitasking and keeping a home running and generally tend not to get noticed as much?
I think probably it's the opportunities to drink and the places. You know, if you have children, you probably are not going to bring them into a pub every time you want to have a drink, you know. So you're more than likely it's going to happen in the home or on the way home from work or when the children are in bed. So if the women have the children most of the time, then it's going to be worked around. That's what happens, is we work things around our lives. So if the men don't have the children, then, you know, they have a freedom, I suppose, to go to places that you wouldn't be bringing children to ordinarily.
So in that way, drinking amongst women manages to stay hidden for longer, perhaps, or at least only witnessed by the children.
It does. And one of the women that come into the Recovery Hour meeting for women talked about these, and I'd never heard of it, but these rosé and play dates, you know, so this has become a kind of a trend where people are kind of, the women are kind of coming together in an acceptable way, drinking in this way, with other women who were drinking in this way also.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of that. I was like, oh my God, that's, you know. So it's happening. It's happening in those environments also.
It's also still, isn't it, a sign, frankly, that we are holding women to a higher standard. You know, I mean, I gather for you it's an issue that because people associate alcohol with lower sexual inhibitions, they tend to be more judgmental of women who drink more than men.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we haven't, unfortunately, moved on very much in all our expedient technology and all that sort of stuff, those attitudes haven't really changed. You know, the man will still get the clap on the back for his behaviour and his conquests, where the woman is still very much judged in that way of, oh, how could she do that? And, you know, has she no self-respect? You know, I don't know that I've ever heard that said. And I'm not anti-men here at all. I really want to be clear about that. But I genuinely don't think I've ever heard of a man's sexual behaviour asked that question of, does he not have any self-respect?
Yeah, no, it would just be he's a bit of a sloppy drinker and has wandering hands.
Exactly, exactly. It's kind of almost excused and, dare I say, expected. You know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Tell me about your own experience. When did you start drinking?
Oh, my drinking started when I was 12. There was, and that's going back many years. I'm a mature woman myself, so I'm not a spring chicken in that regard. But it was 12. It was back in the 70s, and
so access to drink was pretty hard. You must have been quite determined.
It was pretty hard in one way, and yet it was pretty easy in another way, because I would have known people who would have went into the off license for me and bought drink for me, no problem.
Right.
You know, so it was almost kind of normal. But it wasn't really that big of an issue. So it was easy to access in that way.
Okay, who buys drink for a 12-year-old?
Well, people did back then, and it was almost laughed at. You know, it was almost like, you know, oh, let's see what they'll get up to kind of stuff. Do you know? And I mean, we haven't really moved on from that. We see images on YouTube all the time, or one of the social media platforms, where we'll see people giving children alcohol and seeing the reaction of the child's face from tasting the alcohol, and people are laughing. You know, so it's not we're not as conscious around these things as we would like to be.
Yeah, I'm just suddenly feeling very guilty, because one of my favourite photographs is of one of my young ones, I think about 3, putting her finger into a pint of Guinness and saying, that's disgusting. But
yeah,
but that's exactly the starting point that you're talking about, isn't it?
It can be, yeah, absolutely. It can be, because there is no kind of opposing response to that.
What would the correct opposing response be?
What would that correct opposing response be? Well, I suppose what I would ask is, how did that child be so close to that pint of Guinness in the first place?
Oh, because I put it in front of her.
So there you go. So how mindful are we around our own drinking habits in front of our children in our homes and in our environments? How conscious are we of what the children are seeing their parents doing? And, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but what I'm saying is, when something like that happens, we have to then question, how did it happen?
And what is a healthy way to drink in front of children, or example to set, do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely the occasions around which people are consuming alcohol in front of children, you know, and the amount. You know, we have to be mindful of the amount that children are seeing their parents or other adults around them consuming, you know, and that it's responsible. You know, like, if you don't have a problem with alcohol, that also means you still need to be responsible about how drinking alcohol is portrayed to children.
Mm.
You know, because you as an adult may not have a problem, that doesn't mean children won't necessarily develop a problem later on in life.
Back to your own personal story, yes. What was your transition out of drinking to sobriety?
So I crossed a line for me I had my nephew, who I loved dearly. He was only 14. I took him with me to the pub. I was absolutely I was in an awful state, and then I sent him home back to where he lived on 2 buses, and when I realised I had done that, I'd put that child's safety at risk. That just, like, that was enough. That creased me completely, you know. And that's when I asked my sister, who had been pleading with me for a long number of years to stop drinking the way I was drinking, to say to her, I know now what you're saying. Once I start, I can't stop. And she said exactly what I needed. How can I help?
Oh, smart woman.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I wish more people would ask that question when people say, I have a problem or I'm not happy with how I'm drinking, rather than say, oh, sure, it's only a few drinks and you drink like me. Mm. If we ask that question, how can I help? We might be able to help somebody in a different way.
And back then to the men and women thing, is the road to recovery or the road to sobriety different for men and women in your experience?
It is, and definitely now that we're kind of very much online, women are able to access recovery support meetings because they're online and they don't have to look at childcare. So if we don't have the online space, that's the biggest barrier for women accessing any kind of treatment or support is childcare.
Because I can't imagine that there's a huge amount of rehab facilities that take women and kids.
There is one in Ireland, in Coolmine. There is one that facilitates that process for women access and treatment. One.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
And how does that actually work? I mean, how do you have a family unit surrounded by recovering alcoholics?
Well, the people would have their own kind of unit, their own kind of living space. And then there's childcare provided. So the women can go and do their different group works and their different support groups, knowing that the children are looked after and they're literally only a stone's throw away. And it's a much more natural and normal environment for a child to be in, because it's like being in a creche, you know, in their own community.
Yeah, I guess.
And they don't have that separation that if the children were separate from their parent, getting that support, you know, then you have a child who's dealing with probably separation anxiety.
And is he madly oversubscribed?
It's absolutely. There are less places than are needed, and we need more. We need more of these support services for women to access treatment easily and readily and not be put on long waiting lists where God only knows what can happen because they're left waiting.
Okay. And what is then the difference about how men tend to approach it over women?
In terms of their recovery?
Yeah.
One of the things that we notice is they tend to have the social aspect tends to kick in quicker for men.
The support mechanisms,
that bonding, I mean. The kind of the sport element of things or the different kind of interest. Fishing is a big one. You guys love your fishing for some reason. So that community that builds in a life of a person who's in recovery tends to build a little bit quicker for men than it does for women. And again, I'm going to keep saying it's the childcare issue. It's the women getting out to have these opportunities to do that social life. You know, it's the childcare is going to be the barrier.
Okay, worth repeating again and again. Sandra Losty, founder of Recovery Hour, thank you very much. And if you have been affected by anything that myself and Sandra have been discussing there, you can call Samaritans on 116 123. That's all that we have time for. The programme was produced by Barbara Feeney, researcher Amy Ryan, broadcast coordinator Geraldine Collins, and Kieran Dunn on sound. Now, good afternoon, Ronan Collins.